Can you imagine trying to get a simple yes or no answer from a politician? Of course not. Who has the time to wait? So why would you wait 10, 12, or even 16 weeks for installation when in as little as 6 weeks, you can have custom-made, energy-efficient Pella windows and doors in your home from Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin? It's true. The competition is telling people to wait up to 16 weeks for installation to feel more cozy and start saving on your energy bills, even on those chilly April mornings. Just stop and say Pella now. On top of installation in as little as 6 weeks, through the end of February, save more with 50% off qualifying installations or 7-year 2.99 APR financing. Forget the long waits. Get beautiful, energy-efficient Pella windows installed by Pella certified installers in as little as 6 weeks. Set your free consultation today by texting Pella to 79489. Tell them Regular Joe sent you when you text Pella to 79489 to set up your free consultation today. Welcome back. Joe Giganti, your Regular Joe, here with you on a Monday morning, 9:35. On the phones with me, Senator Ron Johnson, the great senator here in the state of Wisconsin. Appreciate you being with us this morning, Senator. You mentioned Fox News Sunday. I don't know if you watched Sunday Morning Futures with Maria Bartiromo, but you got quite the shout-out from Rick Grenell for the work you've been doing to try to actually get to the nitty-gritty of what really occurred on January 6th and many of the other investigations that you've been spearheading. And I don't know if you caught that, but he called out the great work that you and another senator have been doing on that front. So I just wanted to be sure you were aware of that.
No, Senator Grassley has been a great partner. And, I sent out a letter mid-January to all four sergeant-at-arms, the two former, from the House and Senate, and now the acting. And I haven't heard squat. And so that's another thing. I'm sitting through the trial here. I haven't got any response. And even the point where the House sergeant-at-arms, the acting one, won't even let me know if she's or he has turned the letter over to the former, because I don't have his address. But here, the House managers are laying out all kinds of new evidence, all kinds of new video that we've never seen. And, of course, they doctored it in the most, unfavorable light to the president, obviously. And I think that was part of the problem. So the House managers put on a strong case the first day, because they had all the doctored evidence. I think they undermined their case the second day when they were talking about laying out the Raskin standard, which is not the standard on incitement. Mm-hmm. And the first seal is it foreseeable? No, it wasn't, which is why we didn't have beefed up security, apparently. But that's the point of my letters. What level of security was there? I haven't got that answer. I mean, was this pre-planned? What is the truth about people requesting National Guard troop and being turned down by the House Sergeant-at-Arms who reports to Pelosi? What's the truth there? And something else that's kind of – I'm scratching my head is, as tragic as all the deaths were, as tragic as the death was of Officer Sicknick, for over a month we were told, mm-hmm. and it's unrefuted in the press, that he was bludgeoned to death with a fire extinguisher. We saw in the video a fire extinguisher being thrown, and I condemn that. But the fact of the matter is there was no blunt force injury now on Officer Sicknick. How would he really die?
Well, and a matter of fact,
lot of information, a lot of questions remain unanswered, but the House managers had access to all this information for an impeachment trial, no due process whatsoever, and really we're still in the dark of exactly what happened on the 6th.
Well, and as I agree, the death of Officer Sicknick is a tragedy no matter what. But the New York Times, who held on to that story for quite a long time, has quietly now retracted it. Because, as you said, there was no evidence of blunt force trauma. Apparently, from some of the reports I've read, the autopsy is being held. They will not release the autopsy. I think they're 30 more days or so. There's some inexplicable delay on it, which, again, makes no sense. And it's important to know from the simple point of view that this is where this case is being built off of. I mean, you hear them talk about five people. Matter of fact, Liz Cheney used the phrase five people were killed that day. That is not accurate either. There were people that died, including a guy that had a heart attack while he was on the phone with his wife. He was not in any harm's way. He was not participating in any of these things. He had a heart attack. To try to count that into the numbers is disingenuous at best. And on the National Guard, again, Mark Meadows has said that the president himself offered additional troops prior to the event. in anticipation and concern that order be kept, and that was also turned down. So again, you have a lot of things unanswered, not exactly surprising when we're dealing with it. But a great example, and I want to share this and get your take on this. So Saturday evening, so after the acquittal's done, Michael Van Der Veen, who's one of Trump's attorneys, was on CBS News with Lana Zak. I just want to play a little bit of the exchange because I have to applaud what he did, because I think he called her to time, unlike most do in the media. Cut 21, it began with this part of the exchange.
Let's follow up with a point that you're making right now about the House managers, as you say, doctoring evidence. And the argument,
They didn't deny it. I put it in front of them three times.
To be clear for our viewers, what you're talking about now is a check mark that's a verification on Twitter that did not exist on that particular tweet, a 2020 that should have actually read 2021, and the selective editing, you say, of the tapes.
That's not enough for you? That's not enough for you?
Which I thought was a great response. Quickly, though, he also, a little further in the interview, he calls her out as a journalist for the ridiculousness of the stance she's taking in trying to defend this. Cut 22.
I can't believe you would ask me a question indicating that it's all right just to doctor a little bit of evidence. There's more stuff that we uncovered that they doctored, to be frank with you. And perhaps that will come out one day.
And just one final cut from it literally ends. The interview ends with a mic drop. We always hear that. We see it on social media, hashtag mic drop. But I think Van Der Veen had had enough. But again, he points out the obvious, but it needs to be done. Last cut here, and we'll get your reaction, Senator. Cut 23.
A slanted question that was set up to say
it's okay for them to cheat. That was your question. Isn't it okay for them to cheat?
I didn't say that.
Just a little bit. You said, to be fair, it was only a check on Twitter. That's what you said. You got to live by your words. That's the problem. The media has to start living by the truth and not try to create a narrative.
Michael Van Der Veen, thank you for joining us. I do appreciate.
Yeah.
Okay.
And literally it ends with him taking his mic off and dropping it. But I love the fact he said, isn't that enough for you? So a little bit of falsifying evidence is okay? Is that the new senator? Is that the new standard, Senator?
Of course, I was, when I'm watching that, I'm looking at that and go, that's his Chuck Todd moment, because Chuck's done that to me, as have other, and I'm going to put this in air quotes, journalists. And that's part of the problem here, Joe, is you don't have journalists. You know, there are fewer and fewer journalists. So you have advocates. And they're not... You know, when I go on those shows, they don't interview you, they argue with you.
Mm-hmm.
And it is highly slanted. Well, let me just talk specifically what Van Der Veen is talking about in terms of doctored evidence.
Mm-hmm.
She talks about, you know, the blue check mark. No, the more substantive part of that tweet is it was a tweet of a woman, a religious woman, talking about bringing the Calvary prayer group, not the cavalry. It was used as it was cavalry. You know, when Trump in the House managers, video presentation said, you know, fight to the death. He wasn't telling his supporters to fight to death. He was saying if the tables were turned and this was Democrats, they would fight to the death. Again, completely distorted it. And the other thing I really did appreciate, and again, this is going to get me in trouble, so let me preface it. I condemn the breach. I condemn all the loss of life. I'm consistent, no matter what political spectrum. But the more I kept hearing armed insurrection, you know, when I hear armed, don't you think of firearms?
Right,
guns?
Yes.
You know, a question I had is how many guns were confiscated? How many shots were fired? I'm aware of one. You know, the arms, yes. And let's face it, those rioters certainly learned from BLM and Antifa that you can use a flagpole as a weapon. You know, I got that. And they used bats. But to call that an armed insurrection, it was the most pitiful armed insurrection anybody could ever possibly imagine. I mean, the one guy in the Senate chambers there, he had plastic wrist ties. You know, what was he expecting to do? Literally go up to Mike Pence and capture him?
Right, take him under arrest. I mean, citizen's arrest.
It's absurd. The reason I didn't foresee that is those aren't Trump supporters I know. I'm sitting in the chamber. I literally was never afraid. I literally wasn't. Maybe others were. Maybe when you see the videos, go, oh, I might, maybe I should have been. But I'm watching video even when I'm back in my office. I'm seeing the people in the Capitol staying within the rope lines. You know, now that's not all of them, but you know, that's what I was thinking in terms of the trial. My own experience, when was I aware that there was a real problem? That was when it was announced that somebody actually died. You go, oh, my God, this is more than just some idiots that shouldn't have breached the Capitol and they're breaking the law and they're going to get arrested and they're going to pay their fines. Again, I did not know really until the House manager showed us the video that none of the rest of us had access to the full extent and really how reprehensible the racial slurs were. And again, I condemn all of that. But again, it all fits into the defense of President Trump. I don't know what he knew. I mean, I wasn't aware of this stuff as it was going on. So again, you can Monday morning quarterback, you can put these timelines together. But again, an armed insurrection. No, this was a breach. It's unacceptable. I condemn it. There is, you know, I mourn the loss of life. But this was, you know, there was pre-planned agitation. But to call that an armed insurrection, which is what they're doing with now the 8-foot fence with concertina wire. $500 million at least, basically a signal to America that the 74 million Americans that voted for Trump are suspected domestic terrorists, insurrectionists, and we need to protect ourselves against 74 million Americans. That's just BS.
Well, and I want to tell you, so as this was happening, just as a point of reference, when I first became aware on the 6th that there is trouble in the Capitol, and as you know, I tuned in, some of these things were going on. I actually called we had some members of the audience that were going to be there, and they were doing reports for us. So I called them and I said, well, what are you seeing? What's happening? These are people within eyeshot of the Capitol, somewhere on the grounds, and where they were. They had no idea this was occurring. Again, not that it didn't happen, but just to give that perspective that what you're seeing in those videos, and again, I condemn it as well. I have from that very day I condemned it very publicly, but it isn't this mass thing that they're trying to make it seem like that everybody, I mean, there was hundreds of thousands of people there for the rally, many of whom didn't know till they got back to their hotel rooms or back on their bus that anything had even occurred because of the nature of how things were going on, where it was occurring and so forth. So again, to try to paint this, as you said, as some kind of massive, you know, almost like there was a military effort being put forth by these citizens is well, it's ridiculous to begin with, which, and you mentioned the guards. Now there's talk they want to keep the National Guard, keep these fences up until the fall. One, how does one justify that in the capital city? And two, who's paying for all this? Because this is going to cost money.
Our children are, because, you know, everything's deficit spending now just about. So as far as I know, there is no justification. So there's always a threat level out there. There's always crazies that are posting things on, and you just have to try and separate the wheat from the chaff there. But I'm not aware there's a heightened security issue here, that there's a heightened threat level. So, I mean, it's just we all live with that. And it's a shame that, you know, politics has gotten to this level of viciousness. But, again, I basically look at that and figure that the reason it's being done is to paint a broad brush and try and communicate to the American public that, first of all, those 100,000 people, they were all armed insurrectionists, and you've got a lot more people, 74 million people that voted for Trump, that are also suspected domestic terrorists, which is why they're talking about deprogramming.
Right, right.
They're talking about, you know, passing new laws on domestic terrorism so that we can surveil, you know, Americans and violate their constitutional rights. I mean, that's the direction this is all headed to. This is a narrative. This is a meme put forward by the Democrats for political reasons. This is all politics. That wasn't a trial with due process. That was a political event. Okay, that was political theater. Everybody knew the result. Now, I'm happy to have the full story come out, but the House manager did not provide the full story. There was a highly slanted version that they only had access to the information, and the president's team had virtually access to none of it until the trial started. That's not due process. That's not even close to fair.
Now, one final question on that, related to the trial itself. There's been reports that it cost upwards of $30 million to do this. Do you know if that's accurate or what price tag would be attached to this impeachment sham that they just went through?
I can't imagine it costs that kind of money. I mean, again, you can put numbers on things and kind of blow things out of proportion, but you know, we were going to be in session one way or the other. Our staffs are there. So, you know, I'm sure they paid a pretty penny for their slick videos. You know, I'm sure there was staff, but I mean, you pay for staff anyway. Now, I've had Chris Coons accuse me of the same thing in my investigations. They cost millions. No, I'm just using my Senate staff. I'm going to, they're going to get their salaries regardless. So I just put them, I cast them with that duty. So no, I think I discount that.
Sure, and, you know, again, and like I said, that's why I wanted to ask.
A half a billion in terms of the security around the Capitol that I don't believe is necessary. And I think that also is political spending.
Well, it's certainly for the show to try to give that impression that, again, that it's unsafe and that, frankly, conservatives, those that believe in the rule of law, Constitution, traditional values, that they are the threat to the United States, which, again, we can't allow that perception to continue.
No, nothing could be further from the truth, which, again, totally countered the Democrats' own argument when they said, well, this is totally predictable and foreseeable. No, it wasn't. Trump supporters are for law enforcement. We're not the side that is looking to defund the police. And that's, you know, part of the hypocrisy is these House managers are, you know, cloaking themselves in the Constitution and how supportive they are of law enforcement. No, I mean, it's their side that wants to defund police, get rid of them all. It's their vice president that encouraged people to donate to a fund to bail out rioters so they could riot again. They're the ones that want open borders.
Well,
the hypocrisy was just grotesque, and I'm glad the president's team pointed it out effectively.
I made the comment earlier in the show that I never knew Democrats cared so much for Mike Pence. All the love they were throwing his way last week. Again, a good man. Not saying that, you know, I'm not saying he shouldn't be respected, but it's just amazing to hear them make arguments. I heard Dick Durbin making an argument about his concern for the future of the Republican Party if they stay tethered to Donald Trump. And I never realized that Dick Durbin really cared about the future. It's good to find these things out in these dire times. I want to give you the final word, Senator, as we head to break here. Your thoughts on the next steps, how we get back to actually solving the real problems that we have, including the fact that they continue to, you know, to use COVID as a cudgel towards the American people getting back to normal. Your thoughts on what we do next?
Well, it's what I've always said since I entered the public realm, and what I did in the private sector is concentrate on the areas of agreement. So, and this, it starts with a shared goal and shared purpose that Americans do share. We love this country. You know, we want to see it safe and secure and prosperous. We want opportunity for every American so they can raise their children in safety and prosperity. That's what we want. So you start there. We share the same goal. Okay, now what are the things that are preventing us from achieving that goal? What our threats are there to our security? So it's about focusing on the areas of agreement as opposed to what the Democrats do, is exploit the divisions.
I think a great, great, great starting point. As always, Senator Johnson, I appreciate you joining us. And as many of the listeners have been writing in as we're talking, thank you for your continued leadership and your courage. I know it's not easy. We appreciate all that you do, sir.
Have a great day. Stay healthy.
You too, sir.
The Regular Joe Radio Show.